Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking, I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to New Books in Psychology. I am Eugenio Duarte, your host, as well as a psychoanalyst and clinical psychologist in Miami. Today, we are talking about the phenomenon known in psychology as borderline, what it means, who it describes, and how best to understand it. My guest today is Zeljka Matijašević, author of the new book, The Borderline Culture, Intensity, Jouissance, and Death, published in 2021 by Roman and Littlefield. I would like to say a few words about my guest. Zeljka is full professor in comparative literature at the Department of Comparative Literature and Faculty of Humanities and Social Sciences at the University of Zagreb in Croatia. She got her BA in comparative literature and French studies from the University of Zagreb. She holds a master's in philosophy and a PhD in psychoanalytic studies from the University of Cambridge in the UK. She's author of 5 books in Croatian, including Lacan, The Persistence of the Dialectics, published in 2005, Structuring the Unconscious, Freud and Lacan, published in 2006, An Introduction to Psychoanalysis, Oedipus, Hamlet, Jekyll and Hyde, published in 2011, The Century of the Fragile Self, Psychoanalysis, Culture, Society, published in 2016, and Drama, published in 2020. She also wrote 2 literary works, Black Lymph/Green Heart, an alternative dictionary of the psyche, published in 2017, as well as Defenses Tinged with Death, a psychoanalytic novel, published in 2020. She is a member of La Fondation Européenne pour la Psychoanalyse and the Croatian Writers Society. Zeljka, welcome to the show, and I apologize in advance for my mispronunciations.
Well, thank you very much, and thank you for the invitation, and those mispronunciations were really minor.
Thank you. I want to first congratulate you on the book, and I hope you can tell us how it came into being.
Well, actually, this is the phenomenon, the borderline phenomenon is something I have been researching for, I think, more than 10 years. And it really started with my awareness how many cases of the borderline personality disorders or people who have been diagnosed with such disorders I have met. And to my surprise, you know, those people really didn't have that much in common. And I really started investigating and talking to people, and usually those were the people who have had one psychotic episode in their youth, in their adolescence, or something like that. but people who basically manifested pretty much all the traits that we would ascribe to the neurotic personality. Yet when it comes to the borderline, and as the name itself signifies, it is really on the border between two very, very strictly defined phenomena. And it really needs to have two very, very strong categories so that it can be placed between. For example, from the beginning of psychoanalysis, those two strictly defined phenomena were neurosis and psychosis, and borderline was supposed to reside in between. Today, you know, and there is really the prevalence of the borderline personality psychiatric disorder, which I really don't tackle that much in my book, as my approach is clearly psychoanalytic. But today, when we think about the borderline personality, we usually have in mind a person, a character who has problems with regulating his affects, who has very, very, and this is probably most important, very intense affects that have to be channeled and somehow suppressed and really, yes, and suppressed and channeled. And also somebody who, if we relate to that person's cognitive styles, somebody who really tends to see other people and the world in general in black and white terms. Basically, you would hear probably from the professionals that splitting is the main word that defines the borderline, but I wouldn't be so sure about that. And in this really perspective, maybe those three things that I have mentioned, affective dysregulation, splitting of the objects into good and bad, and seeing the world in polarized manner as black and white, are most salient characteristics. Also, there is really a predominance of negative over positive affects, which really discerns the borderline category from, example, the bipolar disorder.
So when you refer to the borderline, does that refer to a type of person or a kind of experience or maybe both?
Well, yes, that's a very good question, because in my book, I often use the term not the borderline personality, but the inhabitant of the borderland, which I think, as you say, is it a type of person or is it the form of experience? I think it is both. I think it is both. And that there is the tendency to really generalize the array of borderline phenomena. And I think that this is really the case where or type of disturbance where one highly individualized approach can only be of any success, because their experiences are so difficult. There were many, many attempts to establish some sort of an early trauma to the causes of the borderline personality and to establish the equivalence where one-to-one would function, but it is not that way. Also, there is, when we talk about, I think, emotional intensity and really good and bad objects, that emotional intensity, we also have to admit that it is only in part genetical. Yes, genetic. And I would say I don't usually give genetics more than 25 to 30% when it comes to this particular experience. But I think that looking at those people as going through certain very intense emotional experiences, there is also a chance, although a slim chance, that those people will stop to be heavily stigmatized. And that was also really, I think, the main purpose behind my writing of this book, just to make sure that we have to admit that there is a very strong stigma regarding the borderline personality, because the borderline personality usually there are really occasions and of course induced by certain stressful emotional experiences when they tend to display psychotic symptoms or have transient psychotic episodes. And there is this problem in our culture which separates so clearly between neurosis and psychosis still. So everything that is even has a psychotic tinge clearly passes on to the other stage. And this is the really the stage of schizophrenia. So and on the other hand, I was really very enthusiastic about writing this book, because I think that in young people who exhibit some sort of borderline personalities, there is so much to be done, and so much can be done in those very early stages when they have had one psychotic episode, which is probably their, which can be very easily their last psychotic, first and last, were it not, you know, this societal terrible stigmatization. And we all know how important is the work of early interventions in the case of first psychotic episodes.
Well, I'm glad that we're talking about this and that you are mentioning that, because I've met several people who actually self-identify as borderline. There has been a lot of stigma attached to this terminology, but as often happens with a pejorative terminology, the group to whom it applies sometimes takes it on and tries to use it in a constructive way. But I think even people who see borderline in themselves don't always know what they can do or how they can heal. So when you say there are lots of things that we can do, especially if we're able to intervene when people are young or in the early part of their process, what are some of those things that can be done?
Well, actually, I think that the paradox of the borderline personality is that you can really do a lot at a very early stage before that person becomes completely demoralized by the societal attitude towards anybody who has had just one psychotic symptom. You know, we all know those are really how people who are who don't know basically anything about psychology or psychoanalysis or mental diseases, how they are extremely frightened by psychotic phenomena. And I think we have to work, and I think we are all working on three separate fronts. One front is, and in the case, in those cases, first, there is this very, very difficult job of raising social awareness about the fact that not every psychotic symptom signifies schizophrenia. There is also the need for psychoanalysts and psychotherapists to cooperate with psychiatrists, because in the case of the borderline, it is a very, very common and almost the rule that both pharmacological therapy and psychotherapy or psychoanalytic therapy go together. So I think it is called the borderline, but precisely that phenomenon urges us to cross our disciplinary borders. Just my idea.
Well, and speaking of the borders that we're crossing, of course, your book is entitled not The Borderline Person or The Borderline Phenomenon, but The Borderline Culture. And this is a novel idea that you're introducing. What are you referring to with this? What is a borderline culture?
Yes, that's a very good question, as it is really the title of my book. I tried to relate the societal and the individual in such a way that I ask myself, what is the main texture of the modern society? And of course, this happened after I read, first time I thought about it when I read Christopher Lasch's Culture of Narcissism when I was still a student, and then started to thinking that there are some conspicuous phenomena which really do not comply with today's culture. And also, this was important, my intention was not to diagnose the ills of the society, but rather to explain how the borderline personality comes to be shaped by the very texture of the society, which means that we have so many borders which seem to be crumbling down. There is, should I really mention this border between, as we previously had, the border so well established between the pleasure principle and the reality principle, and that now we have three types of reality: psychic, material, and virtual reality. So there are so many other borders that have somehow crumbled down, and we are not invited, but definitely it is socially acceptable to give free rein to our fantasies. Fantasy has always been in psychoanalysis the word with, how would I say, you know, the phenomenon which the psychoanalyst has to really approach with utmost care and cautiousness. And now we have this those social networks, areas of virtual reality where we are enhanced to employ our fantasy in order to create our not only social but our private selves. Also, please.
I just wanted to make sure I'm understanding your points. Are you saying, number one, that health, psychological health depends on our ability to maintain certain borders, certain boundaries? And number, if that's the case, then are you further arguing, number two, that society, culture, at least in present day, is responsible for some of our difficulty maintaining those boundaries between outside and inside, reality and fantasy?
Yes, definitely. I would say that represents one of the main arguments of my book, is that, you know, definitely the society is responsible for the many ills that have really befallen the borderline subjects, or shall we, you know, we are now leaving the phenomena of purely something which is related to emotional disturbances. And another example is that when we talk about splitting and internal splitting of our internal good and bad objects, then when you see the texture of modern Western society, pretty much everything that we see around is cast in a really black or white terms. And these are basically the terms black or white which we have inherited, I think, from theological discourses. And this is really ideas, and they have been reigning in political discourses ever since the end of the Second World War. So basically, there are really very strict polarizations. Everything is seen in black or white. And what we really as societies really badly need are really gray areas of moderation and bringing, and the possibility to bring together even those views that seem diametrically opposed. We badly need our transitional space in all areas of the society, not just in the psychological area.
Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals, so you can go back to doing what you love this spring. Looking for gourmet meals? Try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. And this is the part I really like. No fuss, no mess meals. Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning. You simply heat and savor the good stuff. Factor's the solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking. Head to factormeals.com/NBN50 and use code NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code NBN50 at factormeals.com/NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
And are you talking about Western culture, or are you talking about something different or something broader than that?
I think, actually, I had to restrict myself to analyzing the Western culture just because of the accessibility and availability of the data. But I think that those mechanisms can really be easily found in all other cultures. The emotional disturbances which manifest themselves as seeing the world in black and white, and all people in black and white, are just not called the borderline personality, as this is really clearly the Western descriptor.
It's clear that one person who influences your thinking on this is Jacques Lacan, who some of my listeners might be familiar with him because he's been referenced on this show before. But for those who don't know or haven't heard about him before, can you tell us who he was and how his idea of jouissance influences your thinking?
Yes, thank you. Yes, Jacques Lacan, I'll just make a very brief introduction. Jacques Lacan was the most ardent advocate of Freud, and he, after Freud's death in the early 50s, he named his whole project of revitalizing psychoanalysis as a return to Freud. This is because he thought that after Freud, psychoanalysis has regressed to pure clinical practice, and that he thought that psychoanalysis, in Freud's view, was something that had such a great import on culture and society in general. So basically, he introduced really very, very complicated philosophical concepts into his thinking. We know that his writings are extremely hermetic. When you read Lacan, you get a lot of self-imposed torture, which is sometimes gratifying and sometimes it is not. Okay, but let's say that it's mostly gratifying. And Jacques Lacan I think this is kind of anecdotal. Jacques Lacan was actually born too late to be sort of one of Freud's dissidents, as he was really so different to Freudian ideas. But then he couldn't have finished the way Jung did, or Adler, or some others. So basically, Jacques Lacan proposed this concept, as you said, the concept of jouissance, which is extremely, extremely thoughtful and explains so many things. He explained this notion. Freud talked about the pleasure principle, but the pleasure principle was always related and is always related to the state, to the condition of homeostasis, of the constancy principle. It's just something that is pleasurable, but at the same time very moderate, and the external stimuli are brought to their minimum. But then Jacques Lacan says there is another form of pleasure which we'll call jouissance. Jouissance is basically the French word for orgasm. And jouissance, Jacques Lacan says, extremely ecstatic, intense experiences where pleasure borders with pain. And I really used at large this concept of jouissance to explain how people in the 21st century enjoy themselves. It is not, I don't think they are led by the pleasure principle. I don't think that we are prone to moderate or moderate pleasures or minor things or really small pleasures. I think there is really this tendency, which is, and that's also another important argument of my book, I think. You know, this whole strand is produced by the mass media that promote and foster extreme experiences, extreme intensities, whether it is in the form of extreme sports. And of course, in my book, I relate to this obsession with intense experiences as being really born in the countercultural 60s in a different way. But,
you know, I want to get into the influence of your thinking on the counterculture, but before we leave jouissance, are you saying that, maybe I'm making a connection here and you let me know if I've got it or not, but that jouissance is another illustration of an inability to tell the border between, say, pleasure and pain? And so if that's a symptom of society, is that one more way in which society is shaping the borderline person, the borderline subject?
Yes, this is precisely what I hope to have put in this book. This is, I think, just the main form. I really contend that the main form of pleasure that the society is imposing onto us is this form of pleasure where you can't really have pleasure without pain. I think, and nobody thinks that this is really problematic. You know, people really torture themselves at the price of pleasure or jouissance.
You know, it makes me think about an area of work that I treat a bit in my own practice, and that's eating disorders, and particularly the phenomenon that you see with people who struggle, for instance, with binge eating disorder, whereby that maybe it starts off as pleasure, but the eating continues to a point where it leaves pleasure and it tips over into pain. But by the time that has happened, it's too late, that the person didn't have a chance to realize that some sort of border was crossed. Does that jive at all with your model here?
Yeah, I think it. I really think it definitely does, because you are sort of invited to a certain form of pleasure, but this pleasure gets more and more intense, and at one point, this pleasure will turn into pain, and then you won't be. But the very moment in which the pleasure turns into pain, as you said, it may already be too late to. And there is also this problem with intense experience that people who have had them just can't forget them. There is really something very, very addictive in terms of intense experience, whether we talk about sexual experiences or other types of experiences that are intense, that they are really similar to heavy addictions.
You say in the book that one of the things that you think has contributed to the culture's valorization of intensity is, as you mentioned, 1960s counterculture, as well as late capitalism. How do you think that these are connected to your understanding of borderline culture?
Well, my first thought, and I always thought about intensity, and you know, maybe I have had too many contacts with people who think that intensity is an absolute fulfillment of life. Maybe this book is a revenge. Well, basically, I connected the two by the fact that whether we talk about the 60s counterculture and the forerunners of the counterculture, the beatniks, intensity was, I think, the key word. Especially in terms, it was, you know, if we just recall that very, very banal formula, sex, drugs, and rock and roll, but basically all that intensity was really led by drugs. And drugs were given then, and drugs which were not then illegal, they were sort of, they were presented as an evolutionary tool. Something which will lead the individual to a higher state of consciousness, and basically their idea was to really break down the conformist ego and to open up to a higher self. So basically, this is where the intensity, I think, where the intensity of the West was born on a larger scale. But then now. How to relate this? How can we relate that to capitalism? Well, the fact is that, you know, intensity. Everybody thought that you know, being very intense, being very very rebellious, crushing down the boundaries was very very subversive. But actually, nobody thought of the fact that intensity may not be subversive. Because there is, from the beginning, capitalism really co-opted at the speed of light the value of intensity. Because there is something very intense about the consumer, and we can see how in the counterculture and in then capitalism, the dissident and the consumer really overlap. Because, you know, if you go on your shopping spree, you need your intensity. People who are not intense just don't do that. They mostly hate, you know, malls and shopping.
But you're saying this is part of the culture, or this is at the core of capitalism. You have a great quote, by the way, that I want to share with our listeners, which goes, quote, "Capitalism cannot be domesticated. It cannot be made less intense," end quote. So you're saying that capitalism by nature is intense. It does not promote moderate consumption. It promotes intense, continuous consumption.
Yes, definitely. And I was really relating to the definitions of late capitalism that were already made by the authors of the Frankfurt School. But that's the really this trap of capitalism. You can't have a moderate capitalism. You can't have a moderate development, because the very logic of capitalism is such that it can survive only in as much it is exuberant and frantic.
Oh, sorry, please go ahead.
No, I'm fine. You go.
I was just thinking about whether we can bring this back to the individual, and I want to hear your thoughts about how this works at the individual level, because if it's the case that society has become somewhat borderline, meaning intolerant of boundaries, seeking ever more intensity, and if we're creating borderline people, or if that's the argument, why do you think only some people develop what in the consulting room we think of as a borderline condition, while others clearly don't?
Yes, that's the most important. That's the most important question, which relates, which is connected to the relation between the social and the psychological. It is akin to asking why some young girls develop anorexia and others don't. So basically, we need both conditions to develop a borderline personality. But I would never say that psychological factors are the only ones which we have to bear in mind. So basically, there are really, as is in the case, and anorexia, I think, is a very good example. You know, there is this very strong societal pressure on female skinniness, and we have to ask ourselves how some young girls manage to rebel themselves and to create a distance towards this societally imposed form of modern female beauty. So basically, we need both factors. I think that the signals, for example, you know, I quoted one really fantastic article from a leftist, from one leftist activist, when she said, you know, by organizing our different events, and by being always out in the streets, we are burning out. We are burning out, and this is precisely what capitalism wants of us. And then basically she says, this is not, no, we have to sort of choose a different approach to a different opposition to capitalism. And I think I think that moderation is the concept that we will that will come into the fore in the next decades. Because I think when it comes to burnouts, to overworked people, to chronically exhausted people, I think that we have reached the cultural and economic apogee. So I think maybe, you know, moderation. There is even those concepts like first there was a concept of a slow dining, and now I see that the adjective slow has been even introduced into science as slow science. And I think we just need, I know this sounds terribly utopian, but I think it really has something to do with the fact that only moderation can save us from the pitfalls of life, of the life which somebody told us is not worthy living if it is not intense. There is also something very, very problematic about those experiences. It is almost you didn't live if you didn't have one near-death experience.
Zsielka, this has been a fascinating conversation, and it is a fascinating book on a fascinating and really important topic. We are almost out of time, but before you go, I want to know what you're working on now.
Well, actually, I recently wrote two non-scientific books, and now I'm thinking, because they were written in Croatian, now I'm slowly translating parts of my psychoanalytic novel, Defense is Tinged with Death. And the funny part of that book is that it contains conversations between Freud, Lacan, and Jung, who just from the outer space talk about the characters, and we can see sort of the differences between them. And this is something I'm working on sort of almost every day.
That sounds like a fascinating read, and I hope that once it is done and out in English, you will give us a call. I would love to have you back to talk about it. I want to thank you for being on the show. Let me remind our listeners who I have been speaking to. I've been speaking to Zsielka Matijašević, and her book is entitled The Borderline Culture, Intensity, Jouissance, and Death. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Eugenio.